The Mike Missinelli Show.
Yeah. Lurch Stevens. Mike Missinelli. Mike, 97.5, we live. It's like coming to you live from City Line. You know the time. 2-6, Mikey Miss. 97.5. No matter where you at, tune into the show. I'm telling you, television, telephone, radio, let's go. He got the city on lock, and it ain't a question. Been on top a long time, and he's still flexing. Came a long way from the barrel that raised him, but never forgot where he came from. Cause he taking your calls, talking about y'all, talking about life, man. He talk about it all. Smooth on the mic like a fadeaway from Jordan. He turned into a beast when that lightsaber caught him. Top shelf, A1 guest around the globe. Best interviews and topics you didn't know. Sparring with callers back and forth like a Google chat. His resume speaks for itself, yeah, you can Google that. There he is, it's the man you've been waiting for. The sports talk author Fonzarelli, Mike Missinelli. Yeah, Mike Missinelli.
Yeah, it's a Friday cool day. As we await the finale of the series between the Toronto Raptors and the Philadelphia 76ers, which shouldn't go more than four games, it is the Mike Missinelli Show. How's everybody doing out there on a beautiful Friday in the Delaware Valley? And, you know, I don't like the many-day lull between games. I just don't like it. It's funny because the journalists in this town, the ones that write stories, have to write stories to fill time. Like, they have to fill these days with stories. Like, what more can you read? I'm going, with James Harden on board, the Sixers are slowly starting to figure it out, right? It's an off-day story. Like we haven't read enough. And these poor guys, they have to write stories. At peace with role, Tobias Harris is finding new ways to contribute to the Sixers' dominance of the Toronto Raptors. So all these little stories that we want to absorb, but we go, just get to the game. Let's just get to the game and let's get finished this series. And then we'll reevaluate everything as they play a better team, which they will in the second round. And, the thing about Philadelphia fans is we're smart. Like, we don't go, okay, well, now they're going to beat the Heat because of the way they look in the series. Every series is different. And if they stumble in game one, then we're going to go back to being the same complainers. Well, Doc didn't do this, and Tobias didn't do that, and Harden can't get by anybody. So this is why I want the damn game to come, and it's going to come soon enough. It'll be tomorrow. All right, so here's what I will pose this question just for laughs and giggles, since there's not a lot of substance to get into today. We've talked about all the angles of this series and what the Sixers are doing after they won game three. So here's the question. If the God of sports came to you and said, okay, here's the deal. You can trade a game four win for a split in Miami in the next series. Would you take it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You would?
Not a second thought.
You would extend the series and look ahead. That's presuming an awful lot. Connor Thomas is with us today. Tyrone is off. Jen is with us, of course. Jen, you drinking coffee? Is that coffee?
I am, yes.
It's the biggest mug I've ever seen.
I know, it's big, right?
Got that filled?
It's Taylor Swift. It's not all the way full, about...
Good Lord.
About there.
All right. Well,
it's like 16 ounces of coffee.
I mean, it's...
bouncing off the wall by 4 o'clock.
It's the biggest, option that the Keurig offers.
Oh, it's that with the big Keurig option.
Yeah.
Okay. So you got a big cup of lousy coffee.
It's skinny. It's not lousy. It's not right. Terrible.
All right. Well, in any
you
event.
You just hate it.
Where was I? Okay. So Connor, you're telling me you would say that you would give in to the God of Sports. The God of Sports goes, all right, you got to lose game four. I mean, you got to extend it to game five. You extend another game. You never know about injury, stuff like that.
Yeah, right? I know. The injury is the only concern, though.
Right, so you're telling me, because they're going to series anyway. So I'll give a game four L in order to split in Miami.
Absolutely, no doubt. Because you split in Miami, I like their chances back up here in Philly.
Okay, but suppose they win game four and they go to Miami and win two.
Well, that's
fine. You're giving in to the gods of sports.
Yeah, well, I'm getting a guaranteed thing. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush.
But you're a young guy. You want the consensus, like betting a money line on a big favorite.
I don't know.
Like betting a one to two horse.
This team, like, we're seeing what they're doing against a Raptors team that's bereft with injuries that probably wasn't all as good as they looked coming into this series to begin with. Miami is not that deal. Like, Miami is a solid basketball team. So if you can guarantee me one in Miami and give me a chance to come back here and take two at home, and take a big lead in that series, absolutely I'm taking that.
Oh, I see you're afraid of Miami a bit.
I'm still worried. I think the Sixers have a tough matchup, and I think we've seen that in the times that they played Miami this year.
Okay. Miami didn't have Embiid, though. So, Jen, I'll pose the same question to you. Goddess basketball comes down.
Yeah.
And he kind of looks like he's got a basketball head. The god of basketball.
The god of basketball.
Yeah, the god of basketball, like Mr. Met, but it's a basketball head.
I like it.
And he comes to you and he says, would you trade a game 4 loss for a split in Miami?
Yes, absolutely.
You would do that too?
Yes. Yeah.
See, I would not.
I know.
I would not. I want this series over.
I know.
I don't want to go to a game 5 and extend my dudes.
I do.
Or get it over with, and I'll take a full strength team to go into Miami and do that anyway.
It makes perfect sense. It does. But I am a little scared of Miami, too. So.
Wow.
Yeah. I would take it.
All right.
I think we can beat them, but a little scared. A little shaky.
How many people would take that?
I mean, they haven't made it out of the second round since 2001. So, if you can give me one game already in the second round, I'm taking that.
All right. Every time I bring up Ben Simmons, people go, you got Ben Simmons derangement syndrome. I don't care if I do or not. I'm going to pound this guy for the rest of his career. I hate this man. All right. So I'm going to bring it up anytime I get it. Anytime that he does something foolish and stupid that people don't recognize, I'm going to bring it up. Now, I don't know what the media does in New York. I worked up there for a couple of years. I don't know how they are now. But for these people out there to put up with his nonsense day in and day out without ripping this guy as a fraud means they're way softer than the media in Philadelphia. This guy is stringing you out up there. He's stringing the whole fan base. He's stringing the players on the Nets. He's stringing out a whole organization who traded for him in hopes that he would help them win. And now he says, I'd like to target game 4, but I don't know how my body's going to feel. This guy's scared to death to play, and nobody calls him on it up there. It's disgraceful. To the state of journalism, it's disgraceful. Do we have him?
Yeah.
We have sound of Ben?
Unfortunately, we got to hear this guy.
Listen to him. Now, it was a foregone conclusion that he was supposed to play game 4. Oh, definitely game 4. Because he's shirking game 3, pushing it ahead to game 4. Now he's starting to think about it. Well, I don't know about the game 4 either. Listen to what he has to say.
Have you ever heard, Ben, some people have said, why does a guy want to try and play when he hasn't played all year in this situation without having a training camp? Or why do you say, this is worth doing right now when... I don't know how my body feels.
Yeah, I mean, body-wise, it's, once my body's ready, I want to be able to, help this team win. That's what I'm here for. So, it is what it is. I got to get on the floor and help this team win. I've been traded to the Brooklyn Nets, and that's what they need me to do. So, that's my focus right now.
If you see your team struggling on defense and know what you can do.
It's frustrating. Yeah, it's so frustrating. Yeah, yeah. especially when you're not out there being able to contribute. But I'm doing what I can, being vocal on the bench, talking to my guys, helping where I can.
Oh, my God.
So little things like that, I'm just doing what I can at this moment. Then, obviously, when it's individual workouts, doing what I can on that side to get back on the floor.
Do you start thinking, when I get in, I'm going to do this, that? Or
always, and that never changes. Every time I watch a basketball game, I'm, he should be there, he should have cut, different things. That's just how I'm wired, so.
That's how you're wired? Listen to these soft questions out there for those wimps. The guy says, why is it worth doing at this point, if you know what I mean? It's worth doing because he's getting paid to do it. He's getting paid. He has a responsibility to his teammates, to the city. Why is it worth it? That's the question a guy asked.
That's just,
what kind of mamby-pamby crap is this up there?
It's unbelievable. And if you hadn't seen him do it for the past 5 years down here, I can understand giving him the benefit of the doubt. But there's a whole book on the reasons why you should be grilling this guy on what he's doing and frankly stealing money.
I can't believe that they're pandering to this guy. He's defrauding the whole organization. We didn't even get to the part where he said, game 4, hopefully I'm ready for game 4, but it all depends on how my body feels after the workout, which means he's not even committed to game 4. Well, you got to be kidding me. This guy intentionally did not play basketball, which meant when he was traded, he wasn't ready to play basketball. He's defrauding the whole organization, and nobody will call him on it.
And he's more focused on trying to get the money back that he was rightfully fined down here than actually playing for the team that traded for his rights.
Listen, I know he's not a Sixer anymore, and he shouldn't be my concern. Well, an athlete who defrauds any fan blanches me. It just makes me, it makes me ill. And knowing the character of that guy and what he did here, and now how he's transporting it up there, are they oblivious to it? This is, like, I care about journalism. I hate mamby-pamby asses. I really do. Is there anybody with cool yuns up there to go, hey, dude, you know, you're the one that caused the situation by being lax about your training, and now you're letting your team down. How's that feel? How about if you suck it up and play? What is going on?
And it's New York. You would think that they would do
that. What kind of mamby-pamby people are up there? Why would it even be worth risking your health at this point? Oh, come on. I can't stand it. All right. Let's have a fun show on a Friday here. That guy just gets under my skin, and people let him do it. He hit the wall here, and we let his ass have it in print and in voice. He's up there, la-di-da-di-da. I mean, wear this pair of shades tonight and some designer sweatshirt, and I'll sit there, and I'll rally my team. I'll talk to my guys.
Cheering from the bench. How about you get on the floor, dude? How about you play basketball for the first time in over
Is there a columnist up there with any balls at all? 610-632-0975 is how you get in. It's the Mike Missinelli Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
The Mike Missinelli Show. The Fanatic.
All right, it is 4 o'clock on a Friday. It's a special hour, always on a Friday. 4 o'clock hour is brought to us by Landisbach, your one-stop shop to create a jaw-dropping outdoor paradise, online at landisbc.com. But 4 o'clock on a Friday also brings us to great number 36. Brian Westbrook hanging out with us for an hour. Hello, B. West. Where is he? Oh, there he is. There he is. Hello, B. West. How you doing?
Good afternoon, Mike. Miss, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. And so many things to talk to you about today. So let's roll right into it and talk about the Sixers, because it's the first topic that we're all talking about. 3-0, you saw how they won that game 3. Your reaction on how this series is going, my friend?
Well, listen, Mike, I told you last week I had the Sixers winning in 5, but they've been more dominant throughout this series than I actually expected. And for me, what I've seen as the difference is the other guys that I wasn't expecting to have, you know, just really good games. Tyrese Maxey, a guy that I thought he would have a good game here and there. My expectation wasn't that we would lean on him as much as we have. You know, he's been impressive. I think Tobias has done a great job defensively. And James has kind of just done just enough to figure out a way to win. And of course, Joel Embiid has been dominant. And so to me, I've been really impressed with the way this team has come together, especially in this first round so far.
All right, let's take you back to game 3. Very exciting. And, you know, in the regulation, they didn't get the greatest shot off. And then here comes the final shot in overtime where the coach had to rescue him with a timeout. And designs that kind of shot. Now, there are a lot of haters, not a national media, saying, oh, you designed a three-point shot from your 7-2 center. What are your thoughts on the reaction to that and, first of all, the shot?
Well, man, I wasn't a fan. To me, I wasn't a fan of that shot until it goes in. I mean, your first
thought. Like Jalen Rose all of a sudden here now. That's what Jalen Rose said.
What, is that what he said? Well, yeah, I wasn't a fan of it until it went in, because naturally it's not natural for your center to take those types of shots. But when you have a Joel Embiid, an MVP, one of the most skilled big men that we've seen in the history of the NBA, then that's a little bit different. You start to change your thoughts. And so to me, you don't necessarily try to get the ball to Harden, because he's not a guaranteed shot maker at this point.
But he was out of the game.
Yeah, of course. He wasn't even in the game. Right. Yeah, so you don't get the ball to him. You get the ball to your best player. And you allow him to make a decision, and it was a right one. He makes the shot. To me, that's the biggest part, that you get the ball to your best player. Doc Rivers was able to scheme that up and draw it up, and Joel Embiid knocked down the shot.
So I'm confused here. Are you endorsing the shot or not?
Yeah, of course I'm endorsing the shot.
Because it didn't sound like you were endorsing it.
Well, no, in hindsight, of course, I'm endorsing the shot. That wasn't my first idea. But
hey, well, interesting. What would have been your first idea?
My first idea normally is get the ball to one of your guards and allow them to find a way to get the ball into the basket. That's my first idea, and that's a traditional way to think about basketball, probably the same way that all the pundits that around the world, around the NBA, have talked. You try to get the ball to one of your guards and allow them to score the ball. Again, our MVP is our center. He has the ability to make those types of shots, and he has confidence in him. The team has confidence in him to make those shots. I was impressed that he was able to make it. It was a great shot. It was a great shot.
All right. With all due respect to you and the people who have had the same opinion, getting it to a guard is a foolish thought. Can I tell you why?
Sure.
All right. So there's 0.9 seconds left. You're going to get the ball to a guard. What's he going to do? At that point, who on that team does anything with that final shot if it isn't a guy who can come off a screen because his defender is going to stay low? He's not going to chase out there. So you pick him out with a beautiful screen. And is he not your most reliable three-point shooter at that point?
He probably is, yeah.
That's but the only shot you're going to get off is a three-pointer.
Mike. Traditional thought.
But traditional is foolish thought. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Mike, we always, everybody goes through traditional thought process.
Idiots go through traditional foolish thoughts.
Everybody thinks traditionally what? Until you see a shot like
okay,
that.
Okay, well, let me tell you why Jalen Rose is an idiot. All right? Because Jalen Rose is going with traditional thought. When traditional thought at 0.9 seconds, what's traditional thought? If you inbound it to a guard, he's got to put it on the floor. And you don't have time. At that point, the only shot you get is a catch and fire. And B coming off his screen, is the guy going to be able, it was a brilliant design.
Mike, this is where you're wrong. if you have Steph Curry, Clay, one of these elite shooters on your team, then you get the ball to a guard in that situation.
Well, but they don't have that. That's what my point. It exemplifies my point.
They got the ball to their best player. That's the beauty of it. They got the ball to their best player, who happens to be a really good three-point shooter and the best and most skilled big man in the game.
Okay, well, that's traditional thought, to get into Embiid.
Well,
when it pertains to the Sixers, that's traditional thought.
Well, here's the traditional part of it. Usually that guy is not your center. That's the traditional part. The untraditional part now is that Embiid, especially in that situation, especially with Harden out of the game, he's that guy and he happens to be your center. That's the conventional part. Conventionally speaking, your best person to touch the ball in that situation is a guard. There's no doubt about that. Everybody knows that. The only person that apparently does not know that, Mike, is
me. It's not, because they don't have a guard of that ilk on the floor. So the thought evaporates like smoke. The traditional thought doesn't apply.
Well, don't you give Doc Rivers some credit for that?
I just said it was a brilliant design.
I give Doc Rivers some credit for that, understanding who the best team is, and he got the best shot available. I'm happy about that.
You're pretzeling my brain here. You're making my brain a pretzel.
I think you have something wrong with your brain today. I think, you know what it is? I know exactly what it is. You had a long, hard week. And you said, when Westbrook gets on the phone, I'm going to disagree with him.
Here's what triggered it, okay? A brilliant design turns into a brilliant shot. It was the only choice they had, and it was a brilliant design. I wake up in the morning, and I hear Jalen Rose speaking like an idiot, saying, well, yeah, it was a great shot because it went in. No, it was a great shot because it was designed to be a great shot. And Jalen Rose should know better. I get Brian Westbrook on the air. He parrots Jalen Rose. That's why I'm going nuts here.
Well, I think Jalen Rose is a smart man. And, because I didn't hear what he said, now it all makes sense. Because us basketball players, we just know things better than what you know,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you what it is when it comes to Jalen Rose. Because Jalen Rose has been picking at the Sixers his whole media life for reasons that are unclear to me. So instead of sitting there and giving him credit and saying, what a brilliant design, no one on earth would expect them to spring Embiid for that shot. And the fact of the matter is, he does make clutch threes. He didn't say that because he's got this anti-Philadelphia thing going.
No. Hold, let's back up. Listen, I love Joel Embiid just like everyone else in Philadelphia. What do you mean he makes clutch three? What do you mean?
He does. Look at his track record of making threes is amazing in clutch periods.
In what clutch situations has he made threes?
Oh, like, man, I wish I just read a stat, and I wish I could pull it up The statistics of him making 3-point shots in clutch situations are very high.
Well, if that's the case, I don't have that stat. If that's the case, then again, more credit to Doc, more credit to the play design, more credit to the passer, more credit to the entire team, and of course Embiid for making a shot. Traditional wisdom dictates in this situation, get the ball to a shooter, normally a guard, and allow them to score. This team is totally different. And I'll tell you this also, Mike. If James Harden is in the game, if he didn't foul out, then James Harden is taking that shot.
Maybe he would have, but he was. See, Brian, this is what I'm trying to tell you. With what they had on the floor, that was absolutely the best design. Because you're not going to design it for Tobias. You're not going to design it for Maxi. There's not enough time for Maxi to put the ball on the floor and find space. Who else are you going to design it for at that point? Harden's out of the game.
Let me ask you this, Mike. When you hear me say, I agree with you, what goes through your mind?
Well, I haven't heard you say that yet.
Well, because I've said it in a different way without saying those words, because I know you have
all right, so I want. Okay, I want
to. I know you understand. Oh, I agree with you. It was the best.
I would like to hear you say, Mike, not only do I agree with you, but you're the best basketball analyst I've ever.
There's two things I'm not going to say. I'm not going to say that I agree with you now, and I'm never going to say that other part.
You're not? I can't even get that today.
I was going to say that before, but now you ruined it.
Yeah, it was the last thing you were going to say. Stop it. All right. Let's talk about dear old VU. Mm-hmm. And a shocking development comes down the pike. As the Sixers are going in, playing the game here, here comes news that Jay Wright is going to retire. Now, did you have any wind of this at all?
I had no wind of it. They did a great job of keeping a secret. I'm Mike, next week, I'm riding on a plane with Jay Wright to Texas for a business meeting. I mean, unbelievable. It's absolutely unbelievable. I was shocked. I think because of Jay Wright's appearance, I mean, he doesn't look his age at all, in my opinion. It feels like he hasn't been at Villanova for 21 years. He's been there for a long time. Of course, I was in school when he first got hired there. Obviously a great coach, Hall of Fame type of coach. It's scary because he had done so much with the program. Being able to compete with a small school like Villanova against the likes of Kansas and Kentucky and North Carolina and win, especially those couple national championships, is super impressive. I was actually more impressed with Jay Wright this year than ever because I believe he just out-coached everybody to make it to the Final Four. And the team wasn't a great team, certainly was not on the level of 2016-2018 team. But I think he just out-schemed guys, he out-coached guys, and he had his players more prepared than ever. And it's sad to see him go. I have a crazy theory if you want to hear it, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
My theory is, Jay Wright, you're sitting at the top of the world 2016-2018, and it just keeps getting harder and harder and harder to recruit guys at Villanova. And there's a part of me that thinks, in a way, and again, this is totally my conspiracy theory, that he realizes, okay, I'm at the top of the thing right now. Maybe this is a time to exit, and I can still figure out what I can do, other things. I'm not saying that he's going to coach somewhere else, but maybe there's other ways that he can help Villanova or other institutions where he's at right now. Because I think it's just harder and harder every single year to keep the basketball program you know, at the top the way that it has. I mean, listen, he's just done a great job. I think it's harder and harder to do that.
I think you're absolutely right. I think you're right on the button. I think the situation, the landscaping and change now with the transfer portal and losing guys and the guys not getting playing time, and there's always that threat that they're going to leave you, and he's a three-year guy. He wants guys at least for 3 years most of the time. Yeah. And then the NIL situation, you know, with the schools that can offer somebody $10 million in NIL, and I think he ran up against that. But let me ask you, as an alum and a very important Villanova person, what kind of a void does this create? Because frankly, with Jay right there, here come applications, here come donations. It's why they were able to build that beautiful structure across the street there on the other side of Lancaster Avenue. What kind of void now? What happens to Villanova?
Well, the same way that when you lose, you know, Roy Williams down in Kentucky, I mean, at Carolina, I mean, it's a huge void. I think Kyle, who I've known for a very long time, I think he'll, you know, of course he'll try to fill that void as best you can. But when you have a guy at your program for 21 years, the donors believe in him, obviously because of the national championship, the school, the kids, around the program believe in him, the kids around the country that, hey, they are not those one and done type of kids, believe that they can go to a school and they can develop as a player and get better for 2 or 3 years and then have a chance to hop to the league. That hurts you there. I think at this point now you have to build faith in your program again, even though, again, Kyle was he was an assistant there for a while. Obviously went up to Fordham and did his thing there. But when you lose a caliber of a coach like Jay Wright, I mean, how do you feel that? Fulfill that and fill that void as quickly as someone like Hubert Davis did down there in Carolina? I mean, it's almost impossible to do. But you got to remember, those guys are going to Carolina because Carolina has this big mystique. I think a lot of guys are coming to Villanova because of Jay Wright. We have to find a way to get the guys back into Villanova because Jay is gone at this point. And I think it's going to be difficult to do that.
Listen, he could probably do anything he wants. He's probably going to be offered several million to be a TV analyst, studio analyst, or whatever. He's going to get one of those jobs if he wants it. And he's a special assistant to the president of Villanova. But let me ask you this down the line. He does that for a couple of years. There's always an itch to get back into coaching. Now, Jay, I don't think, would ever take another college job because he wouldn't betray Villanova like that. But could this in a couple of years be the precursor for him taking a shot at the NBA?
I think that itch, that offer has been there for Jay for some years now. I mean, even before he won the national championship, I think that offer has been there for years for Jay. And he's always said no. He's always loved the Villanova area, being around the kids. He's always loved that. It makes me feel at this point that that's not in the cards for Jay. I, again, I have no inside knowledge. I just feel that Jay doesn't want that. And if he wanted that, he had an opportunity for the Boston job a couple years ago. I mean, he's had opportunities for the Knicks job a couple years ago. He's had opportunities for some of the best jobs in the NBA. And he's always turned it down to go back to Villanova. And it, to me, it just doesn't fit exactly the way that I think what Jay wants to do. It doesn't necessarily make sense to me that he'll go to an NBA job. But I'll tell you this, I am riding with that plane with him next week. I'm going to pepper him with all the questions that I possibly can.
Yeah, well, he's going to say no now. He's going to say no now. What I'm saying is, like, a couple years out of the industry, would it move him to actually take a shot at it? And you're probably right, it wouldn't, but you know, when you're without the game and you're doing TV, and it comes a point in time where you go, you know, I don't feel worthy doing this. I feel more worthy as a coach. And the only outlet at that point is the NBA.
Well, you know, listen, I've seen guys retire and come back to coach. We've seen it, you know, across the board a bunch of times. I wouldn't be surprised if it happened. But to me, that's not Jay's, where he wants to go. I believe that TV, and I do believe in that role. That special assistant to the president, that's a huge role for him. That takes him, you know, out of the limelight as far as basketball. But as far as alumni, you're not going to get any bigger figure in the Villanova community than Jay Wright.
Well, let me
speak that language.
Let me take it further. Because the headmaster is, what's his name? Father, who runs
Father Peter.
Father Peter is the president of the university. I believe he's got 2 years left on a contract. Now, Jay Wright is not an academic, but you can surround yourself with academics. What better representative as the president of the university would there be than Jay Wright?
I don't think you can find a better representative of the university than Jay Wright. I probably could make an argument as an alumni. You probably want an Augustinian president or one of the priests there.
Yeah.
I think it's been like that for a very long time. I probably can make that argument as well. But again, Jay Wright has the stature to be able to do anything he wants at Villanova, and he's earned that because he's built a program that obviously went on to win a couple of national championships. But even bigger than what he's done on the court, he's wrung millions and millions of dollars into that university. And he's brought the prestige of the basketball program back. And I think that's part of the legacy of Jay Wright. So if anyone can do it coming from a basketball side of things, I mean, become the president of Villanova, it would be Jay Wright.
All right. One last topic I want to address with you as we go into the break. It will take some phone calls. A lot of people want to talk. It came up today, the concept of what defines a winner, whether James Harden is a winner. And I think it's a ridiculous thing that people say, well, he's not a winner because there has been one game where he didn't have his best game in the playoffs. I look at his record. He has won 75 playoff games in his career. There are a ton of guys that are top 50 players in the NBA that have not won a championship. What in your mind defines the label of whether you're a winner or not?
I would describe, I'll just use James Harden in this example. I would describe James Harden as a great player. I would describe Kobe as a winner. I would describe Michael Jordan as a winner, someone that we see consistently winning the biggest goal, which is the championship. If you say that James Harden is not a winner, obviously the opposite side of that is that he's a loser. He's not that. We all understand that. He hasn't won consistently enough or at all the ultimate goal, the ultimate prize, which is the championship. And when you compare him to the people that I consider winners, Jordan, Kobe, LeBron on certain levels, he would fall short of that label. But, I mean, you're talking about great player. Obviously, he's a great player.
Well, I tell you, this is a day where I don't think I've ever butted heads more with you.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, we're up against a break, so I don't want to bet. But let me just suggest this to you. Doesn't being a winner also depend on who you have around you? Like Kobe Bryant, he had a great team. Michael Jordan mm-hmm. didn't win for 6 years in this league until they put players around him.
Absolutely.
Magic Johnson won, great player, but look who he had around him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I don't get this. You're not a winner. It's hard to win.
Very hard, yeah. And
Charles Barkley didn't win a championship. Is he a winner?
He is a really great player. He is not to the level of a winner.
Oh, no, my God. Dude.
You can't be a winner if you haven't won the ultimate prize. You just can't be. You can be a great player. You can be one of the top 50 players ever that play in the game. Absolutely. But if you haven't won the biggest prize in that area, that sport, whatever the competition is, you can't call yourself a winner.
Wow. I tell you what, Brian, next time we're together, we're putting a bottle of bourbon in front of us, and we're going to pour neat, and we're going to just to drink it and to discuss this. And if it takes me till 3 a.m., this discussion will go on. We'll start at 7 p.m. It's got to go to 3 a.m.
That's right. That's right. Hey, listen, if you're a winner, then you've won the biggest prize. There's no doubt about that. No, James Harden has not done that yet. If him and Embiid and the rest of this team, Maxey and Harris, can go out there and win this year, then he would be a winner. Absolutely.
So Michael Jordan losing all those years to the bad boys before he cracked through. He wasn't a winner then, was he?
No, he wasn't.
As soon as he got players around him, he magically transformed into a winner.
He didn't. He had all the tools to be a winner. He hadn't won yet.
Because he needed players around him.
Well, James Harden has players around
him. Well, he did. Did he have as many players as the Golden State Warriors?
No, he didn't. No.
See, this is what I mean. Now we're in our third bourbon. And we're continuing. All right, man. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back for phone calls after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.